We're gonna work for about 45 minutes, and then we're gonna come back as a group. Okay, thanks.
Come back, go about tape.
Yeah, so we have a lot of planned material and a lot of priorities. So it's not like we've not planned, it's just not in the book.
But we have a lot of concepts. Clarify that. We have a lot of concepts, but as far as concrete maps and such, we do not have, because our planners dropped the ball and didn't do it. But as a group, we have been meeting amongst ourselves, and we have our own concepts and priorities. We just haven't had a planner actually put it to paper.
We have a few maps that they made.
The citywide planning process to rebuild New Orleans staggered forward last Saturday with 13 planning district meetings across the city. The goal was to move forward with the planning process by aggregating neighborhood plans to the district level. Ultimately, the goal is to compile the district plans into one citywide rebuilding plan by January. Some residents who attended the District 4 planning meeting last Saturday expressed frustration that significant issues in their neighborhood plans remain unresolved, while both planners and residents who have interests in more than one planning district complained that it wasn't fair to expect them to be in more than one place at a time, as many of the district planning meetings were scheduled at the same time. Nevertheless, most residents seem resolved that the unified New Orleans plan process needs to move forward, and they are actively engaged in pressing their list of priorities in countless meetings week after week to rebuild their neighborhoods. Jennifer Weishaupt is the coordinator for economic development with the Mid-City Neighborhood Organization. We're sitting in the Bayou Coffee House right on Jefferson Davis Parkway. This building, along with a lot of other buildings in Mid-City, it had about 3 feet of water, I'd say, inside, and it's a raised building, so about 5 feet of water total in this part of the city. And Mid-City was hit pretty hard, wasn't it?
My estimate for what we actually consider the boundaries of the Mid-City neighborhood, according to what the City Planning Commission has in their master plan, is more than 95% of the houses were damaged, majority of those damaged by flood. There are a very small percentage of houses that didn't flood, which would have had some level of wind damage. I myself don't know anybody who went unscathed, who didn't have some level of damage, whether it was wind or flood. But predominantly, we did see, 5 to 6, and in some areas, up to 8 feet of water. But since the homes are raised, what people saw inside their house might have varied from inches to, several feet, maybe up to 5 or 6 feet.
Just to personalize what that's like a little bit, maybe you could explain your own situation.
My personal home, we had about, 5 feet of water on the street, and so that ended up with 2.5 feet of water in our house. We also owned at the time of the storm, we owned one piece of rental property that was just a few blocks from my house, which had about the same 2.5 to 3 feet of water. And then we had another single family home that my husband was in the process of renovating that was closer to the Faubourg St. John neighborhood, and which actually didn't get any water inside the house, but right up to the floorboards, and so it had a lot of wicking and moisture issues in there.
You're living in your house now?
Yes, we actually moved back into our house on March 18th, and I know that exactly because I was due to have a baby on May 18th, and I told my husband that I had to be back in my house exactly 2 months before the baby was born, because I wasn't having a baby in a FEMA trailer, which is where we were living before March 18th.
I should offer you congratulations twice.
Thank you.
What was that process like of getting back into your house?
Well, for us, I felt like we were very lucky because my husband had left his job in 2003 and started full-time buying and renovating houses, some of which we've kept for rental property, and some of which the majority of which we've turned into single-family homes and resold. And so he, coming back from the storm, had the right contacts and the right know-how to be able to manage the project and get the house turned around. So that's one of the reasons we felt like we got back in our house pretty quickly, considering the level of damage and that the whole first floor had to be redone. Since that time, we have bought three other properties, one of which has been completely renovated and is on the market. One, we're in the process working with an architect to turn a former corner store that was very badly damaged into a single-family home, and another is a double that we're probably will have finished in about 30 to 60 days. So we've been trying to work very closely in Mid-City to turn as many properties around as we can.
If I were to say this is a survival of the fittest scenario, would you think that's an accurate statement with respect to people who are able to come back and rehabilitate their homes?
Yes, unfortunately, I think it is. It's just, there's so much to have to know to understand and so much energy that it takes to go through this process that, you know, people who don't have the money or don't have the know-how or the energy to do it, I just don't even know where they would start. And so what we've done and what I think MCNO and the Mid-City neighborhood has done is try to really be a community and help each other as best as we can, whether that's by recommending good contractors or telling people when you found a bad contractor so they don't get into the same position. You know, my husband, numerous times, he goes over and looks at neighbors' houses or gives them, you know, what his best guess is, what they should do or how they might cut the cost on something and still have a nice product when they finish. So I think, you know, the community aspect is what is ultimately going to get people's houses turned around. And as such, I strongly encourage people who feel like, I don't even know where to begin, to come back and get in touch with us. You would be surprised at how many people will reach out and help you and try to give you the start or point you in the right direction, because ultimately we want all our neighbors to come back and we want this community to thrive.
A lot of people are still, more than a year after the hurricane, are still fighting their insurance companies to get compensation.
Yes, well, we also had another house in Waveland, Mississippi that got washed away. So between the wind and flood damage, I had 8 insurance companies that I was dealing with throughout the process. And I know how frustrating it was, and I know what I saw, the games that every one of them played. I swear they have a manual out there that says, just do this, this, and this, and basically ways to not give people their money. And then when you finally solve the problem with your insurance company, then it's your mortgage company that you're fighting, because now they're holding the money and they don't want to release it. You know, it's extremely frustrating, and, you know, I would think that if people haven't gotten the money at this point, they probably need to seek the advice of a lawyer, because, you know, this is ridiculous, and people need paid for a service, which was their insurance, and if they paid for their insurance, then they need to be given the compensation that's due to them.
One of the things that people can look to for help is the Road Home program. Did you participate in that program? Did you get any benefits from the Road Home program?
I actually haven't applied yet. I do intend to apply. I just got a little scared off by how difficult the application was. We felt like our insurance actually did a good job of covering the damage in our house, but didn't cover any of the damage that happened to either of our outbuildings or our landscaping or our fence or things like that. So I just haven't gotten to the point where I was ready to expend the energy on it, and I kind of feel like people who didn't have any insurance really need that money first, and I don't need to be holding up the line because I'm looking for, you know, a little added benefit that would offset my actual losses.
I think they have enough money allocated for everybody.
Well, I just don't think they have enough people to manage everybody. So they should be focusing on the people who didn't have insurance, who really need this money to be able to come home and make a decision and get these houses back into use and get them out of blighted status.
Well, I heard Walter Leger yesterday say that Michael Byrne of ICF is managing the Road Home program, that they are still planning on handling 1,000 applications a day by the end of this week.
Well, that's good. That's good to know. So I guess I should get online and start my application process soon.
Let's talk about the citywide planning process, the neighborhood planning process. There are actually a number of different planning processes that have occurred and that are ongoing. But the planning process generally, how would you characterize that planning process? What happened in Mid-City? Who managed the planning process in Mid-City? And where is that planning process now?
The planning process in Mid-City was, as one of the, quote, wet neighborhoods, was initiated under the Lambert planning that City Council undertook. And basically, when we were given notice that we were going to have our first official meeting, and there was a set schedule of how many meetings you have and what you do in each meeting, there were a series of community leaders who said, gee, we don't want to go in there empty-handed and get pushed into a plan that doesn't really represent us, so let's at least draft something that we think says what we want Mid-City to be, you know, whether it's a vision statement. So actually one person in particular started that process, and then he sent it out to a number of people who are on our Mid-City Yahoo group, and people gave input. And then basically by the time we had the meeting, which might have been, you know, 2 weeks from when he initiated the plan, we had something in hand that we felt at least was representative of what our desires for the neighborhood. Of course, this is from a layman's perspective with no, you know, not somebody who can tell you this is the right way to plan for a neighborhood, but just to say this is, these are the kind of concepts that we want to make sure are included, and these are the things that are important to us. So from there, we started the formal meetings, and then we basically, I think it was a series of four formal meetings, maybe over a 6 or 8 week period, and we felt like there was so much work to get done. We basically formed an ad hoc group that was just, it's been open to the community, and we meet every Monday night at Grace Episcopal Church from 6:30 to 8 p.m. And in the beginning, or prior to when our Lambert plan was complete, every week we would just either report out on what the committee, some committees would meet outside because that time didn't work for them and they would just send a representative, or we would do committee work and talk about ideas and issues, and then we would, you know, kind of cross-pollinate, you know, the things that would affect one group to another. So it's really been, even though we had some guidance and oversight from Lambert, I've really felt like it's a grassroots planning process, and that the Mid-City Recovery Plan that we have is something that we can be very proud of, that really represents what the people who live and work in Mid-City want for the neighborhood.
What were some of the planning principles that the Lambert group brought to the table?
That's a good question. I mean, one of the things we talked about, or that they gave us guidance on, was really, well, what kind of issues should we be looking at and trying to focus? I think the thing that we've been confused about and are still confused about is, what are the things that LRA is going to fund, or there's some government entity that's going to fund, versus what are the things that we need to go out and find funding for, and how should we prioritize projects, things like that. That's been always one of the biggest questions, and although it's been explained many times through the Lambert process, I think it still brings some confusion to people's minds. I know in some ways the plan that we came up with is a wish list. It's our Christmas list of, this is the Mid-City we always wish we would have if, you know, say Bill Gates wants to just come and give us an unlimited amount of money so we can do what we want to do. But at the same time, I think there's certain things we've prioritized and feel very strongly about, that we know if we want to make these happen, we need to go out and get the money. And we've actually started that in a lot of those areas where we're not going to wait to see what the funds are. We're going to start at least seeking funds, and then if there's some kind of, you know, government funds or federal or state funds that come down, then that can just offset whatever other funds we might find.
What are some of those projects on your wish list, on your Christmas list?
Well, there's a couple of areas that we feel very strongly about, and of course I think these are probably the same for most neighborhoods. One is education. We feel like if we really want to convince New Orleanians to move back to New Orleans, they need to have a good education system to come home to. And that doesn't matter if you have children of school age, you're planning to have children of school age, or your children are past school age. I mean, I think most people would agree that a good education is a foundation for reduced crime levels, for many other things that we ultimately want to see in society. As such, one of the things that MCNO worked on was the chartering of Dibert Elementary School, and unfortunately that effort was not successful. There was a group of board members of MCNO and other members from the community who worked very hard to put together the documentation and go in front of the Recovery School District and go in front of the Bessie Board and the other the entity that they had delegated responsibility for evaluating charters to. And I believe my understanding is that we were the only neighborhood organization that tried to charter. Basically, all the charters that were granted to entities that were associated with a national charter organization. We were not associated with the national charter organization. We did have a management company, but I believe it was a Louisiana-based management company that we had worked on it with. And unfortunately, the outcome was that it was just summarily denied after really stringing us along for months and months and months. That was pretty disheartening, because we really feel like if we can't get a good education system here, we're not going to convince people to come back, whether they're, you know, returning New Orleanians or they're people who are moving here from somewhere else. So subsequent to that, they are taking another run at it. I'm not sure if they're looking at Dibert again, or if they're looking at one of the other schools that's in the Mid-City area. And I know that they're making a change of approach on the education committee, but I'm not exactly positive what that change is. Also related to education, Mid-City had a branch of the public library until 1958 when the downtown central library was put in place, and they felt like it was too close proximity and that it would take people away from the downtown branch, so they closed the Mid-City branch. Well, we feel like Mid-City is a large and viable neighborhood, and that to be the neighborhood we want it to be needs to have a public library branch. So we've worked within the education committee, has worked very hard, and they have secured both a location and a grant that will fund the majority of the needs for a temporary library for the next 3 years. And then we have some deficit that we need to, a gap we need to close, basically, that we are working on some other funding ideas for. But we are looking at having a Mid-City branch of the public library on North Carrollton Avenue, hopefully by February 1st of 2007. Some of the other projects, we feel very strongly about green space and the need for green space, and we very much support City Park and their efforts, and we've been happy to work and provide any support to District 5, which has actually City Park in their planning district. But one of the things that our research has shown is that green space is really only an amenity to somebody if it's within about a 3 to 5 minute walk. People want green space right in their area. So one of the things that we've worked into our plan is to have a lot of green spaces within each pocket neighborhood that's in Mid-City. The other big green space that we have been working with a larger group on is the Lafitte Corridor transformation, and that's the entity that's working on that. It's called Friends of Lafitte Corridor, and it's basically a rails to trails conversion project that ultimately will connect the lake with the French Quarter, and in the first phase will connect Bayou St. John to the French Quarter. And so it's a really exciting project and will connect a lot of historic neighborhoods and really be a nice walking and biking trail, and I think ultimately be a really nice amenity for a lot of people in New Orleans.
Mid-City already benefits from some really great green spaces. The Bayou St. John area, the Jefferson Davis Parkway has a huge boulevard with a lot of green space on it. So when you talk about the need for green space within 3 to 5 minutes walking distance, are you talking about maybe residential areas being converted into green space?
One of the things that we've looked at within each neighborhood is areas where there are multiple houses that suffered severe damage, and many of those may have been neglected long before Hurricane Katrina, but which potentially are in a state of not being able to be repaired, and being able to possibly convert those to, you know, small interior neighborhood parks. One of the other specific green spaces that we have a desire for is a dog park. We have a lot of pet owners in Mid-City, and very good responsible pet owners, but it would really be nice for a lot of people who don't have yards to have a place they can go with their pets where they can let them off the leash and play with other dogs, because you can't really do that at City Park or Jeff Davis, not really responsibly at least.
You mentioned earlier that this planning process, this neighborhood planning process, is a really grassroots endeavor. You also mentioned a Yahoo group. Mm-hmm. Talk about the Yahoo group. Is that something that emerged after Hurricane Katrina?
Yes. Our webmaster who runs our MCNO website, I believe he's the one that initiated the Yahoo group. And the thing that we've done, I think a lot of the neighborhoods have done this, is we want this to be a grassroots process. And we have a lot of people in Mid-City who aren't members of the Mid-City Neighborhood Organization. And we don't feel that being a member of MCNO is what gives you the right to have your voice heard. So basically, we have this ad hoc planning group that meets on Monday. And although there's many MCNO members and many board members that participate, it's not a function of MCNO. It's a community, you know, kind of an ad hoc community organization. Same thing with our Yahoo group. We basically invite anybody who wants to participate in discussions about Mid-City to do that. Now, the way you can get onto it is to go on the MCNO website, and you'll find the little spot that says join our MCNO discussion group, and it'll let you, you know, ask to be subscribed to the Yahoo group. But being on that group doesn't by any means say you have to be a member of MCNO, and we only let members discuss this. So I think we're trying to be very open with people. I'm the interim membership coordinator for MCNO as well, and I've just taken that on a couple of months ago. So I'm really interested in finding out from people what some of the barriers they see and why some people don't want to join the organization. And so that's something that I've kind of undertaken, is trying to figure that out for myself, because right now we have about 300 households and businesses that are members of MCNO, but the population of Mid-City is, you know, 13,000 people. So obviously there's a lot of people we aren't touching that we want to reach out to. And I think it's encouraging. We've really been doing a lot to bring more people into the organization. But it's been an interesting mix of, you know, kind of the community grassroots aspect. And then when there's an issue, that the issue kind of needs to go through MCNO, because MCNO is the recognized organization for Mid-City. So, you know, if you need something on letterhead, it comes from MCNO. If it's going to our council members or whatever it might be.
I'm thinking back to that week after Hurricane Katrina. Is that when that Yahoo group formed? And did Mid-City, did the Mid-City Neighborhood Organization have a website before Hurricane Katrina?
MCNO had a website actually for quite some time. I think maybe they had just revamped the website about a year before Katrina. The Yahoo group, I don't think, formed actually until maybe March or April of this year. There was just kind of this growing email list of people who had gotten in touch, and there was the president of MCNO, and he would, you know, kind of moderating. And so I think somebody finally said, hey, you know, we can do this a little easier if we use a Yahoo group. So like Rebuild Lakeview and all these other organizations, we basically did the same thing.
A lot of neighborhood organizations became very active after Hurricane Katrina via things like email lists, right?
Right, absolutely. It's it's a blessing and a curse, because in Mid-City we have a lot of people who don't have internet access yet, or who don't own computers, or who don't have email addresses. So we sometimes it's hard to make sure that we reach out to those people as well, because it's so easy to communicate with people on email, but you're only reaching, you know, the 300 people that are on that group, and you need to always be aware and focus on how else are we reaching out. And I think in the past, just about the past month, we've really said, okay, we need to do a better job at this, and what are some of the ways we can do it. And one of the things, we had a new member who came to one of our Monday night meetings, who was new to the Mid-City area and had recently moved and bought a home here. And she had this idea that none of us had thought of. She said, well, why don't we put something out to all the area churches and ask them to put it in their bulletin and make a short announcement at each Sunday service? And she undertook it herself. She put together a little blurb. She went around to the churches and hand-delivered it, and we started seeing some new faces. So it's always great when you get that new infusion of, you know, energy and a new set of eyes that says, gee, this makes sense, or why don't you do this? And so it's always nice. Every Monday, it's like something new.
There's a lot of there are still a lot of people displaced outside of the city. I couldn't even quantify it, but more than half of the city numerically is still outside of the city. One of the problems in this citywide planning process is outreach. And are you able to talk about how the Lambert Group handled outreach? Were they able to bring in people, bring in input from people who were not in the city, who couldn't attend meetings?
I'm not aware that they did that. I know that because we did a lot of publicity, there were a lot of neighbors that we were still in touch with through, you know, several smaller neighborhood organizations within Mid-City. And so in some of those meetings, when they were the formal meetings on the Saturdays, we usually would get a bigger attendance because people who might live in Baton Rouge or the North Shore, even as far as Houston, would make a point to travel into town and do something at their house that weekend while they're still waiting on their construction. The Yahoo group has been really nice from that perspective, because we actually have lots of members on the Yahoo group who don't live here or who aren't back here yet, but they're people who are planning to come back and they want to know, what am I coming back to? And so I think, you know, I've had several people email or post up, you know, saying that it's good to know that there's so much stuff going on, because when you're outside of New Orleans, you get what they say is very biased news that focuses only on crime and only on bad things. And so they don't hear about all these things like however many residents are back, or how many houses have been renovated, or every new business that opens, where we talk about that every day. And, you know, that's what people want to know when they live here, is where's the nearest pharmacy, where's the nearest dry cleaners? Oh, did you hear that, you know, Angelo Boccato's opened in September, and that's been just a huge boom for Mid-City. So that's the kind of stuff I think that people like about the Yahoo group, is they get a little bit of a reality check versus national news.
Jennifer Weishaupt, coordinator for economic development with the Mid-City Neighborhood Organization.